Okay. Rashi, as I mentioned, it's hard to say. There are two things I really want to. The two ways to approach this. So I could approach this. I was going to do some readings from Mishlei, which is where you figure you wound up with most of your Mishalim. And I wanted to read a little bit from Kohelet also, but maybe I'll leave Mishlei for next time because it's going to take some time to get through the text. I would like to read you, just because Kohelet's pretty fresh in our minds, I want to read you a little bit. You don't have the text in front of you. If you have an R scroll, it's in the end. It's page 1287, 1285. But I want to read you just from the last chapter of Kohelet to give an example of a case where the mashal is so complete that it's easy to miss the referent, and by missing the referent, you can miss the full intent of the book, or at least of that section. So to read from the last line of Kohelet, and I'll read out loud and translate, and you may have, it may be fresh on your mind because you've just heard it in the last chapters, although I think by the last chapters of Kohelet, after half an hour, people start to really tune out.
The whole book is only because of the end of the last verse.
What's that?
The whole book is only because of the last verse.
Well, I think there's a lot more to it. There's that's a machloket, apparently, and I'd like to think I'm on the side of the people who think it's Kodesh. I think it's a beautiful book. But let me read you this section. It's from chapter 12, verse 1. Uzchor et boreecha, remember your creator, bimei b'churotecha, in the days of your youth, that is, remember who created you when you're in your nice, every teenager thinks they're immortal. Try to remember who created you when you are in your youth. Ad asher lo yavo yumei ara'ah, because sooner or later the bad days come, which means death. V'igiyu shanim, and the years pass. Asher tomar, or the years arrive, asher tomar ein li bahem chefetz, I do not want them anymore. Ad asher lo techshach ha-shemesh va'or, until the sun and the darkness do not go out. V'yareach v'kochavim, and the stars and the moon. V'shavu ha'avim achar ha'geshem. Now we're a little bit metaphor here, but it's clear we're talking about death. But the next line is not so clear. Bayom shi'azu shomrei abayit, on the days that the guardians of the house start to shake. You know what that means? That's the arms. V'hit avtu anshei achayil, and bent are the men of valor. That's the legs. Uvatlu hatochanot kimietu, and the grinding houses are made small because there's so few left. It's the teeth. V'chashku ha'ra'ot ba'arubot, and those who view out the windows start to darken, which are the eyes. V'sugru dvatayim bashuk, and the doors close in the marketplace, which is probably the mouth. V'shfal kol ha'tachana, as the voice of those grinders become smaller, probably as the teeth start to empty the mouth and the mouth starts to close in on itself. V'yakum l'kol ha'tzipur v'yishachu kol benot ha'shir, and all the singers stop to sing. It's easy to miss the metaphor. It really is, because there's very little reference there. Now the reference does come in a few lines. And by the way, the next line, nobody knows exactly what it means. Gami gavoa yirau, they'll be afraid of heights, v'chatchatim baderech, and of cracks in the ground. My only guess is like an old person, they're always, when you get older, so you have a hard time seeing all the way down below, and it always happens, probably not a new idea, that as you get old, usually what happens, the worst thing happens to an old person, they trip on the cracks in the ground and fall and usually break something, and that starts very often not a good thing. The almond trees will flower, v'yistabel hechagav, and the locusts will, the tafer ha'evyona, it's a type of tree, will be, kilecha adam beit olamo, and the man goes to his grave. So nobody knows exactly what those metaphors are. The Hebrew themselves is difficult, we could try to translate them. And I heard a good interpretation was that all three of those things regrow after a death period. That a shaked hides for a few years and comes back, and a chagav has a 7-year cycle and comes back. That there's a little bit of hope, but everything dies and eventually comes back. I don't know if it's right though, because it's not really the mood. But up until that point, you can literally read those psukim and just not see the referent at all. But by not seeing the referent, you miss the whole beauty of the poetry. And then it's never given. There's no key that says, by the way, those are your teeth, those are your eyes, those are your legs. You simply have to know enough Tanakh to know that Anshei Achayil is legs, and that for the word Yizdazeah is from arms. So you simply have to be, I want to give that as an example where you can literally read a piece of text and appreciate it for what it is. It's a beautiful piece of text. It's about death. It's as the sun goes out and as the song stuff, but you, what you're really talking about is the human body. The human body starts to deteriorate, which means it has multiple meanings. And this is the important idea. A metaphor is special in that it could say more than one thing at a time, where literal meaning cannot. Your teeth fall out can only mean your teeth fall out. But as the grinding stones start to disappear, that can mean many, many things. It allows itself for interpretation, including the literal meaning. Including the literal meaning. And that's where I want to actually show you this Rashi. Allow me to read this Rashi. As I said, Rashi is one of the few people who almost never gives you, he doesn't write any introductions to his text except for this. He gives you some hints of the way he does business. Occasionally you'll find Rashi's famous text, Vani lo bati ela pshuto lemikra ulagada ha-miyashevet davar dibur al-ofanav. Which then he breaks. I'm only here for pshat or midrashim that specifically text, and then he gives you midrashim out the wazoo, which have no connection to the text. Of course, Nechama Leibowitz would disagree, and she'd say every time Rashi said something, it's always fixing the textual problem, but I'm pretty sure that the only one who really believes something like that would be Nechama Leibowitz, Zecher Tzadeket Levracha, and perhaps a few of her students. But I know that her main student, who was Aaron, who wrote the book for her, the Pirkei Nechama, he in his own article says it does not work all the time. It's hard to make that work all the time. Here Rashi gives you a different. Here Rashi actually gives you his modus operandi. That's not right. His view, his tfisa, his approach to text, to interpretation of text. And here's the only time he does it, and gives us a great insight. Now you could say this only has to do with Shir HaShirim, because it's only an introduction to Shir HaShirim. But I suspect it has to do with a lot of what Rashi does. So let's read a little bit of it, not the whole thing, but a few lines. Echad diber Elohim shtayim zu shamati. God says one thing, and two things I hear. That's a very powerful statement. It's a quote from a Gemara. It's actually a halachic issue, whether I can take a single pasuk and learn two different halachot out of it. It's machloket in the Gemara, but here he's not applying it to halacha, he's applying it to mashal, he's applying it to metaphor. God speaks one thing and two things are heard, which is a tremendous idea, and a true idea. Mikra achat yotzei l'kama tamim, and a single verse can have multiple meanings. The sof, and by the way, why? Because it's inspired. Because it's inspired, it reminds me a little bit of the famous medrash on Zachor and Shamor, that God is able to speak at the same time, Zachar Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho and Shamar Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho, which Ebenezer, by the way, totally discounts and takes Rashi to task for it, but that was a very French idea. It was very part of the whole French school of exegesis, of interpretation. God says one thing, but because it's God, it's like when you play music backwards and you hear secret messages type of thing. You can hear things underlying the text, which ultimately we believe about our Kitei Kodesh. That's the whole thing about Rabbi Akiva learning that there are nuances in the text. Sometimes it's obvious when words are left out that should be there, or words are extra that shouldn't be there. Sometimes with Rabbi Akiva, it's vavs and tags that you can learn out of. But there is, one does get the feeling that there's that additions to the text. For instance, Eov, a famous one is by Eov. Eov, the first time he gets attacked, the Satan wants to attack him, so all the family dies, and all of his, except for his wife, and all the things around him, and says, V'lo berach Eov et Hashem, which means, berach doesn't mean bless, in this case it means curse. He didn't curse God. The second time, when he starts to get smeared himself, his own body, he says, Lo chata bisfatav, he didn't let it come out of his mouth. The reason why it adds that is one gets the feeling that he really wanted to the second time, but he was thinking all kinds of nasty thoughts. That additional text the second time is there because you're supposed to compare one text against the other and realize that sometimes you could say a lot with just one extra word that you add in. But Rashi is doing this at a much more metaphysical and a much more spiritual level. God can literally say boo and mean boo and not boo. What? Sometimes even the opposite. That's not what Rashi is saying here, but I could show you in Rashbam's where God speaks and he means two different things, and the two different things are contradictory. But the Rashbam, who is the grandson of the Rashi, had no problems with this because he knew what his father had to say. I don't know if Rashi would have taken it so far as to say opposites, but I know Rashbam did.
But it can have many meanings.
You certainly could have multiple meanings because it's God. That's true, absolutely correct. You're absolutely right. All metaphor, it's not explicitly God, but kal v'chomer God. Kal v'chomer. That is, certainly if a human being could do it, then certainly how much more so can God do it. Mikra achad yotzei l'kama tamim. V'sof davar. But in the end, ein l'cha mikra yotzei midei pshuto. A text does not leave its basic interpretation. Now you have to be careful with that word pshuto. And probably the correct interpretation of pshuto is halivni. Is what's his name? David Weiss Halivni probably has the best interpretation of what pshuto is according to Rashi, which is pshuto means context. So the word lafshit et ayan means the surrounding area. So Rashi doesn't really mean pshat the way we mean pshat in this case. Sometimes he does, but here not. And what I'll try to show to you is what he means is you can't make a pasuk say something that the context of the pasuk doesn't fit in. And I'll show you what he means. Pshuto umashma'o. It should be mashma'o. There's a mistake in the text. Va'af alpi shedibru anavim divrayem bedugma. That's Rashi's term, by the way, for mashal. Rashi has different terms, but his most common one in Mishalim is dugma, which would be by example. Sarech liyasheva dugma lo faneav al sidra. He says, of course it's a metaphor, but you can't ignore the contextual relationship of the verses from metaphor to metaphor. Kamosha mikra otz durim zechar zeh, as the verses are established one after the other. This is why, no doubt, that David Weiss Halivni is absolutely correct, at least here. V'ra'iti l'sefer hazeh kama midrashei agada. I've seen agadot all over the place on Shir Shir. Yesh durim kol sefer hazeh midrash echad. Some are books which are all about Shir Shirim, and that would be Shir Shirim Rabba, probably is what he's referring to. And then you have sometimes where it's like scattered. You have in other midrashim, you have a book of midrashim which is explicitly geared towards Shir HaShirim, and you have other ones where Shir HaShirim finds its place in various other midrashim. But none of them fits the flow of the context of the psukim. The Seder HaMikra, just follow the psukim. So I said to myself, I'm going to take what's important to me is you have to stick to the meaning of the text, to put things in the order that they appear. And therefore I'm going to pick and choose the midrashim, which he does, to make them fit in. He does harvesting and he makes them fit in, but they must match the flow of the text. Yeah, I'm going to skip that part because he gets into what the actual, the mashal is. But what he's saying here is something profound, which is, yeah, it's a mashal. But the mashal has to flow after the flow, it has to follow the text itself. You must be able to interpret the text in order to follow the mashal, which means I would like to argue that Rashi would say that the reason why it's important to understand the literal meaning of the text of Shir HaShirim is not because it necessarily means that, but because without understanding the literal meaning of the text, you cannot understand what the metaphor wants to say. If I don't know something about love, then I cannot understand what God meant. Somebody who's never been married, who's never been in love, who's never ran after a guy, or vice versa, or has never said sweet nothings in the ear of their love, cannot possibly understand the metaphor, not because it's about love, but because love is the basis for the reference. If I don't understand A, it doesn't mean A, it means B. It says A, it means B. But if I have no idea what A is, how am I possibly supposed to interpret B? I'm not sure that Rashi would allow two meanings in Shir HaShirim. I think based on his introduction, he only allows one meaning. But what he's saying is that the only way to get to the deeper meaning is to master the simple meaning.
So he wouldn't have liked his students just studying the arts
well. I don't think so. He would have said that was completely wrong because it would be impossible to understand the meaning without understanding the basic text. That is correct. And we'll pick on the art scroll a little bit. The art scroll does make mistakes. The art scroll is not being true to Rashi, but I'm going to take it one step further. From the introduction, there's no way to be positive that Rashi thinks that there's also essential meaning to the story. However, in his interpretation, there are hints that Rashi also thought that there was a viable love story, and I'll prove that to you right now. Let's read a little bit from Shir HaShirim. Ani yishena v'libi er. That's the second paragraph down. I am asleep, but my heart is awake. Now, there are two dream sequences. And we're going to get into Eben Ezra does not feel that they're both dreams. He feels the first one is a dream in chapter 3, and the second one is a lot. The second one is out there. Rashi does not feel that way. He feels that they are two dream sequences, and it's something as if we ever had a time to really interpret the text, it's very much worth going into. But for right now, we'll just stick to the basic meaning. I am asleep, but my heart is awake. Kol dodi dofek. Some people translate kol as hark. I don't like that. I like the sound of my love is knocking. That doesn't mean that it's... I hear him knocking on the door. Pitchi li achoti, rayati, yonati, tamati. Open the door for me. Open for me, my sister. And by the way, be careful. Sister does not mean literally sister. It was a way of saying my love. So when you see the word sister, or you have to understand it has a sexual connotation. It means my love. Rayati, my friend, Yonati, my dove, Tamati, my pure one. It's pretty good stuff, right? I mean, this guy knew what he was talking about. Shiroshi nimlatal, my hair's getting all wet. Kivutzo tairis, sise laila. By the way, where do you recognize these words from? These are from Adam Smirot. Of course, Adam Smirot is all from Shira Shirin. Peshatati akutonti. So she says, hey, I've taken off my coat. Echachayel bashana. You want me to get dressed? I'm in my bed. Leave me alone. There's a sense that she's afraid. She's afraid. She's making excuses. She doesn't want to come to the door. She's if her lover comes knocking at the door at night and she's nervous. How am I supposed to come out? I'm not dressed. Rachatzit raglai. I've already washed my feet. How am I going to get them dirty? I can't put my feet on the ground. Dodi shalach yadom min achor. My love. He put his hand, minachor probably means there was a hole, a latch that you would open. It's hard to say. We don't know exactly how the doors work. Umei hamu alai, and my stomach turned over inside. I butterflies, to say the least. Kamti ani l'ftoach l'didi. So I said, oh, I'm going to get up. I'm going to open for him. I heard him taking his hand off the door, really. The adai not, and by the way, this is beautiful, because what happens is, you ever remember those movies where, you ever have dreams where you had to get something done, and the more you tried to get it done, the slower and slower motion you moved, and you could not get to the point that you want to get to. You know those dreams? That's what's happening here. What's that? Real life. So here, what you're doing is, take a look at the poetry. The poetry is, she slows down the narrative by repeating the words. Wow, it's unbelievable. V'adai kamte ani l'ftoach l'dodi, v'adai not fumor, my hands dripped with honey. V'etzvotai morover, in fact, my fingers, you see, what you want is the haste to the door, and yet we're taking time to, the camera is zooming on her hands, and she's explaining slow motion as she's reaching, and they're dripping sweet honey al kapotaman ul onto the handle of the lock. Patachti ani l'dodi v'dodi chamak avar, and I open up, and my lover is no longer there. He had better things to do. Obviously, he wasn't going to wait and be put off, so he went away. Nashi yatsa v'dabaro, my soul went out with his speech, but l'daber also means. In Aramaic, Vayadber Tachtenu Oyvenu Tachtenu means to lead or to guide. So I'm not entirely sure what the translation is here. Maybe she heard him say goodbye. It's hard to say because it's not clear what he said that made her soul want to depart. Bikashtihu velo mitzatihu. I look for him and I could not find him. Kirati velo anani. I called for him and I could not answer. It's beautiful stuff, right? Beautiful.
Can you tell me what it is in English?
What's that? In the art scroll, you would not get any of this love story. You would get the historical reference.
Where would I get it?
JPS is your best. The best JPS is bar none the best translation, but the modern one. There's an old JPS, 1927, is the latest edition. That's essentially the King James. You have the brown one, or is the modern JPS is the best.
The turquoise.
Oh yeah, that one also the best translation you're going to get.
So what is it?
Just go chapter and verse 2. Oh, I apologize. It's chapter 4, verse 2. Oh, chapter 5, verse 2. Chapter 5, verse 2. Yeah. That's another long shear, which is why it starts in chapter, why the story starts in chapter 2. Sorry, in verse 2, because the Christians actually were the ones who made that chapter system, and very often they're wrong. So the story starts in chapter 5, verse 2. We didn't come Perek Aleph, Perek Bet, Perek Gimel. That's not Jewish, it's Christian. So we have to be careful on those things. Anyway, let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi will surprise us here. Dodi, Shir Shirim, Song of Songs. Dodi Shalach Yado Menachor. Do you see Rashi there? It's on Rashi Shir Shirim. She'etzo Hadelet. What is the hole? I don't know what the hell is. It's the one next to the door. V'ra'iti Yado, I saw his hand. V'nefchu alai Hamon Me'ai, and my stomach went all crazy when I saw his hand. Lashuv, lashuv. I'm sorry, when I saw his hand start to pull away. No. Nefchu alai hamon me'ai. Lashuv la'ahavatov l'fkochlo. Because I got so stomach I wanted to run to him and open the door. Now, what is he? He's not interpreting the metaphor here. He's interpreting the metaphor as literal text. Let's continue on. V'kamti ani l'fkoch dodi v'yadai natrumor. Klomar, b'leib shalem. Why is it stressed? Now, I told you that it was stressing the image of the dripping of the hands because I think it was slowing down the action to give you a sense of tension. Rashi doesn't think so, but Rashi's dealing with the difficulty in the text, which is there's a repetition. What do I have to know that her hands had honey and that, or spices, and that her fingers also had honey? So Rashi says, "B'leib shalem v'nefesh chafetza kimekashetet atzma." She was so well adorned to show how much she loved him. Litahev alisha bereach tov. She took the time to put on all these things to show him, "I care about you 100%." Rashi's not treating here. Rashi's interpreting the text as is. Let's continue on. Moreover, ruach over and fashet lekol tzad. Moreover, what is it? Moreover, which means myrrh that transcends. It means it has a nice smell that really kind of wafts. The dodi chamak avar nistar. He hides himself. Now I'm going to skip a little bit because we're running out of time. So skip down to dodi. Do you see what happens? Look to the second last line of that Rashi, and what do you see? Dodi shalach yadom en achor. Do you see Rashi repeats himself? The second to last line of Rashi, starting with the word Dodi Shalach Yadom Achor, that's the same as the one on top. What does he say? Dodi Shalach Yadom Achor, Kishamarti, when I said Rachatzi et Raglai, what did I mean? I washed my legs. Lo Aftach Lecha, I wouldn't open the door. Lo Ashuv Min Avoda Zara, that means I will, the fact that I won't wash off my feet means I won't take off the Avoda Zara that I've stepped in. I made a decision. You came knocking at my door. I didn't go to you. Here, Rashi is interpreting what? The nimshal, or he's treating the metaphor. But what does Rashi do? Rashi repeats it. You see what he's doing? What's that?
Rashi's explaining it.
Correct. Now, I want to say that it's possible he treats it in such explicitness, however. That is, the truth is he does, but there's extra things in the literal translation. He gives us more material than we really need. That is, I'm not sure I needed to know. Rashi explains to us about love and how, if you really mean it, you dress yourself up perfectly and you run to here, run to there. There's a lot more that Rashi treats in the literal meaning. He really gives some flesh to the love story. All of that, I'm not entirely sure was necessary in order to explain to us that the metaphor is about Avodah Zarah and God came knocking and God didn't want us to do idol worship. So here I have a hint that Rashi believes that there's a love story which deserves interpretation. Now, you could argue that he simply wants to really give it a body because that's the best way to understand the referent. I don't know. There's a lot of extras that Rashi really gets into it here, and I'll show you one other case where Rashi really gets into it. There is the following line, Savarech k'migdal ha'shein. The boy is giving the girl incredible compliments. It's called, in Arabic, it's called a wasaf. A wasaf means, I'm going to take every part of your body and explain how beautiful it is. It was well known in Arabic culture to do this idea of a wasaf. Literally to move up or down the body, covering each part. You'll find that there are three major wasafs, if I'm not mistaken, three major wasafs here, with the last one being totally x-rayed. Really strongly x-rayed. And Ebn Ezra has a hard time dealing how we crossed over from sensual to sexual. But that's for a separate time. Tzavarech k'migdal ha'shein. Your neck is like a tower of ivory. You know, that's obviously was always that the long neck thing was always a very big thing. Einayach breichot l'cheshbon. Your eyes are like the pools in Cheshbon. Cheshbon was the city of of Sichon, actually, on the other side of Jordan River. Al Shar Bat Rabim, on the gates of where the people came in. There must have been a name of a place that was well known. It probably meant something to Shlomo and his readers. For us, we can only guess exactly what it looked like. But I have some beautiful blue eyes or whatever it was, or nice and liquidy as opposed to runny and uchi. Apech kemigdal halvanon, your nose is like the Tower of Lebanon, tzofeh b'nei Damasek. Okay, so I'm not sure that would work. I usually, if I teach this to boys, I usually counsel that they not use this third of the metaphors. So, the truth is, it's not so bad, because I think I would interpret the metaphor as a nice and long aquiline nose, like the Greek or Roman nose, which is kind of aquiline, as opposed to perhaps crooked, like she got punched and, you know, broken. However, look at what Rashi does with this problem. Eini achol farsho. I can't translate this. Lashon chotam, lo linyan pshat, v'lo linyan dugma. I cannot tell you what this means that I cannot interpret this as its simple meaning, which is a nose, not in its literal guys complimenting girl translation. Now here pshat does not mean what I said, contextual reference. Here pshat is used against mashal, which means neither the metaphor makes sense, nor does the literal translation. What's the advantage of a nose that's gigantic like a tower? Here too, Rashi is bothered. Now you could again argue that Rashi needs to understand the pshat, not because he thinks that there's a real pshat, because he thinks there's a real referent, but he just wants to understand it so he can understand the metaphor. But I would argue that he doesn't if the literal meaning didn't have some value to Rashi, he would not be so upset and need to reinterpret the word. And by the way, he interprets it as this, which is not completely apech, meaning the forehead, because we do have something called manachat apayim, nofel apayim. It's not exactly the same word, but Rashi is so bothered by this insult, essentially, rather than the compliment, that he plays with the text.
He couldn't be humorous, could he?
I think this is... you mean, was he being funny here?
Could he?
I think it's possible. Is it the way I'm interpreting it? I don't know. Maybe I just interpreted it that way. Yes?
If there's something, if you're arguing that Rashi is using the value of the literal in itself, for its own sake,
right. Because if it deals with both, as I would argue, although I can't prove according to Rashi, according to Eben Ezra I could prove it. So the question is stronger with Eben Ezra. But according to Rashi, I would say that God could speak two things at the same time. Perhaps there's a value of knowing a love story. I think Rashi really, not for the sake of a love story, because if one understands how love works, then one could understand the relationship between God and man better. Eben Ezra would not say that. Eben Ezra would say that it has a certain value, that Shlomo wanted to write two books at one time. It's in the holy book because it's holy. It also happens to have, in addition, a really nice story. I'm not sure Rashi would go that far, but I know that Rashi would want to treat the literal text for one reason or another, and perhaps even because it has some value in and of itself. Maybe a love story of Shlomo HaMelech with and the kind of things gives us insight into Shlomo HaMelech. Perhaps that has a value. Rashi doesn't clue us in. I'm just saying that he treats the literal text more than perhaps he has to based on his own explanation. I'm just going to take, I'm sorry, and please, if you have to go, please. But I'm going to read the text and just show you where I believe there are hints of holiness in Shir HaShirim, because I don't want you left with the idea that Shir HaShirim. I want to show you that in the text itself, I think there are hints of holiness. And with that, we'll conclude, and then next week we'll start to analyze Shir HaShirim closer. Ani chavetzelet ha-sharon shoshanat ha-makim. In all this text, which I'm going to skip actually to the second part, there is just a love story. I am a rose of the Sharon. I am a lily of the valley. And he says, and she says, Kishoshana ben achochim. He says to her, no, you are like a lily among the thorns. Ken rayati ben abanot. So is my love like my so too is my love amongst all the other thorny girls, so to speak. Kitapuach batzayar, like a fruit tree, like an apple tree, among all the other non-fruit trees, Kain dodi ben abanim, so is my love, like amongst the other boys. Betzilo chimat yashavti, he has two advantages. I could rest in shade. Ufiryo matok l'chiti, and his fruit is sweet against my mouth. That's a very sensual read. You can't miss the sensuality of that read. So sensual that it would be hard to say that there was any holiness there. I'm going to skip that and then take a look in the, this is the wasif, one of the wasif I was talking about. The last line of the wasif on the second column, Shnei Shadach, your two breasts, Kishnei Ofarim Te'omei Tzvia, are like two fawns, twins of fawns or of deer, Haroim Bashoshanim, that graze among the lilies. It's a very sexual idea, and if you're reading it, really, you're confronted with the idea of a great sensuality in the story. There is no referent here. So I'd like to read you a few psukim where maybe the referent comes up a little bit, just to give you a sense of what I believe is the kedusha of the sefer. First of all, it goes, Anila dodi va'alai teshukato. That's a famous line that we read twice today. Once is by Kain and Hevel, where it says that you will master Va'alav chukato va'atatim sholbo, but also by the eating of the fruit of the tree. Now, we have rejected the idea that there's a sexual connotation from the first sin, but I think we've rejected it because the Christians accepted it. Eben Ezra, in fact, believes that the original sin was one of sexuality, and there's, you can't completely ignore that idea. And also, the Shir itself brings up, the Shir HaShirim, you'll find a lot of Gan Eden imagery. Gan na'ul achotich ala, you are locked garden, my my love. Gan Na'ul Mayan Chatzum. There's many, many imageries that come from Mashiach Hashir. But here I'd like to give you the most convincing ones, that there's a holiness that pops through the text. It's not obvious, but there are little hints of holiness of the text. Mi Zot Olan HaMin Amidbar. Who is this who comes out of the desert? Kitzimrot Ashan. Like pillars of smoke. Where is that from? That's from the Exodus, right? Mekuteret Mor Levana Mikol Avkat Rochel. Those are the spices which are used in the Beit HaMikdash, in the Mishkan. I'm not sure what kind of image that is. Who's this who comes like a fiery pillar of smoke? To my mind, the metaphor of the woman is starting to fade out, and the metaphor, at least in this verse, of the Jews coming out of the desert starts to fade in. And the last one I'll give is what I think is the most effective. There are three separate psukim in the Torah, in Shir HaShirim, which repeat the same words. Sov. This is where the woman is first telling the guy to get lost for a while. Sov. D'melecha dodi litzvi. He comes asking for it. He says, turn away and go act like a gazelle or like a hart. O the ofer hayalim, al harei vater. Go on the hills of separation. She essentially tells him, I'm not ready for you. Go get lost. Next, when he's speaking, he says, ad shiafuach hayom v'nasu atzlalim, until the summer ends and the shadows start to flee. Eilech li al har amor. I will go to the mountain of spices. Vel givat halevona. And in fact, the book ends with, Eilech li al el har besamim. So three times you have this idea of going to a har. The first one is bater, the second one is hamor, and the third one is besamim. Besamim is already in the plural. If I take the other ones and make plural out of them, what do you get? Instead of batar, you get the tarim. And instead of mor, you get moriah. I will go to the har of tarim, and I will go to the har of moriah. So here, it's not just spices. There's a hint at, in my opinion, the holiness of the text. As you're reading through, I think the holiness does edge out a little bit. Just little tiny. If you're asking me a question, how did they get a sense that it was holy? I think a good read of Shir HaShirim, even though the referent doesn't come out, there are hints like this: Hara Moriah, Har Betarim. There are hints at the kedusha of the sefer, and those hints, I think, were more than enough to convince people of the holiness of the book. And next week we'll do some closer readings in Mishlei and some closer readings in Shir HaShirim. Thank you.